Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Focus on Albany. The topic today is going to be a controversial one, and it's been on the news for quite a while now, and it's going to be about sexual harassment. And I have Lisa, help me out with your last name. Lisa?
Delaquillo.
Delaquillo of True Blue, New York. Susan Kang of No IDC, New York. Hi, Susan. And Lizbeth Calandrino, who lives in Albany, and she is an entrepreneur, and she is a publisher of Fabulous Floors magazine. So, Lisa and Susan, let's talk a little bit about how pervasive this problem is in government.
So today in Politico, there was an article that talked about that there had been thousands of allegations of sexual harassment over the past 6 years, New York State government, and that over $6.4 million had been paid out in settling these cases. So I have to think that it is a pervasive problem.
So to me, what's interesting is that Governor Cuomo, when he came in, claimed that he was going to reshape Albany. But it's clear that despite the claims otherwise, that there's evidence that he's just continued letting Albany be a cesspool of corruption and harassment and has done very little about it. And even though he probably could change this very much, and it's very discouraging.
I want to I want to talk a little bit about the situation with Jeff Klein. Now, the lady that accused Jeff Klein of harassment, it was on a bar in Lark Street, and I would assume it was late in the evening. And from my understanding of what I read, there weren't too many witnesses. So it could be a he said, she said kind of situation. And my thoughts are, if Jeff Klein was there with Diane Savino, I don't think he would have attempted such a move on this young lady. Can you share your thoughts about that, ladies?
Yeah, sure. I think that when a woman is bringing allegations against a really powerful elected official, that isn't something that she enters into lightly. She's risking her career and her reputation. And just like we've seen happen, Jeff Klein has gone after her really viciously. And so I think that it's really going to happen very rarely that someone is making something like this up. It's not something that's entered into lightly. I know that Senator Savino said that, I was there and this couldn't have happened if I was there, but we don't know. She was not standing right next to them when this happened. She was somewhere in the bar. We don't know which direction she was facing, or if she was like watching them intently from the inside, if she was having a conversation with someone else. I'm not really sure that constitutes concrete proof that he didn't do it. I think the only way we can really tell if something like that happened is if there is a thorough and independent investigation where a neutral arbiter is looking into the allegations and figuring out what actually went on. But it doesn't seem like the state Senate is in any way inclined to do that, unfortunately.
So,
Liz, you're not
in politics, but no, you live in Albany, and you are in an entirely different field altogether. And you've been in business for a number of years. Have you seen a lot of sexual harassment throughout the years, and how has it been remedied?
I think one of the other things to think about at this point, and I'm sure there are a lot of people wondering, is why all of a sudden is it coming to light? And I think that's a place to start with everybody, that the change has to do with women in power. You know, when I grew up and I worked in, I remember I taught college, and we had a lot of jerks. They really were jerks. And we were supposed to laugh at the, you know, the innuendos about sex. And in most cases, they were people who were of higher status than we were. I mean, I taught college. A couple of them were presidents of the school. And I think that what everybody needs to pay a lot of attention to now is the fact that that's changed, that there's a lot more, we have a lot more power. We're not scared. And so things that used to get swept under the rug, as they say, you know, have really changed. And any business that doesn't have a formal policy, you know, for this and doesn't do training is really, really stupid. That's what I have to say about it. You know, in my industry, which is mostly men, you know, it's floor covering, carpet tile, lots and lots of men. And so, you know, yes, we have seen it for years. I remember a young woman who came to me several years ago and was crying and said to me, you know, she worked in this company, it was a public company, and she had told the guys in there to stop saying the things they did. And they told her to kind of get over it. Well, she did get over it. She filed a huge lawsuit, collected, hasn't been seen since. So, but I'm not sure that really defers anybody. What do you think? It may start deferring them.
Lisa?
Yes. That's a really interesting perspective. I think the Me Too movement has really, you know, helped women find their voice. And I think that, you know, it's time for Albany to sit up and pay attention to that, come into 2018, where, you know, we're not tolerating that kind of behavior anymore. And it really seems like Albany is stuck back in the 1950s when it comes to this stuff. And it's really, clearly been a very big problem, and they need to get on addressing that right away.
Susan.
So I find this all wonderful, because I also work in academia, where it's not like finance, but there's a lot of people who just assume because they have power, then they can just treat women and other gender nonconforming people like they're not humans. And seeing the bravery of people like Erica Vladimir to be able to stand up to powerful people is so encouraging. And I think that as more women come out, we're creating a norm of speaking out against sexual harassment and assault in the workplace and outside of the workplace. And I think that that's what's powerful, is that women are not waiting for things to change. We're the agents of change. We're seeing.
Let me ask you a question. You know, this was brought up the other day, and I think we've all had this happen to us. The woman said to me, you know, doesn't anybody know that when they talk to me, they should look in my face instead of my breasts? And I thought to myself, where do people learn these kind of things? I mean, you raise boys, and I'm not just saying it's a man thing, but you raise a child, and where do they get the ideas from that this stuff is okay? Somebody tell me that. That's what I want to know.
That's a great question. I am raising two boys myself, and, you know, I think the most important job I have is to raise them to be feminists. But, you know, it is a problem with our culture and our society, and it starts at home. But at the same time, our government needs to be setting an example of how we treat people with respect and dignity, and that's not happening right now.
Well, that's interesting.
Am I correct? Am I correct in my assumption that this legislation and the legislature to make it more difficult for a woman to make an accusatory remark?
That's what's happening. That's what's being proposed right now.
Okay. Do you know who's proposing it?
So there's a policy that the Senate majority that is led by the Republicans, Senator Flanagan, who that says that if someone has been shown to falsely accuse somebody else of sexual misconduct, that they could face consequences, punishment, and lose their job. This just recently came to light in the last week. And I believe it's an internal policy to the Senate, but it is not particularly forward-looking or progressive policy that is intended to really root out problems of sexual harassment. In fact, it just seems more protective of those who are perpetrating sexual misconduct. And it's really disappointing that in this day and age that that's the direction they would go in, rather than modeling their rules after, for instance, the New York State Assembly, which has their rules in this regard following their own problems with sexual misconduct in recent years.
Before that, I've got to ask one more question. Let me ask you this. Liz Krueger is a very outspoken state senator. I haven't heard her say anything about this particular issue. I haven't heard Andrea Stewart Cousins talk about this particular issue. So are they all the women senators, all of the Democratic senators in the New York Senate, are they all mum about this?
No, they're definitely not. In fact, Senator Stewart Cousins published an op-ed a few days ago calling out this sexual harassment policy. She was not consulted on it. We don't know if any women were consulted in the formation of this policy, and she called that out. It was published on Loha.com. And Senator Krueger has been interviewed on the radio and she's quoted, I believe, in this Politico article that I referenced earlier, expressing her concerns over this policy. And she's definitely been out there, you know, sounding the alarm.
Okay.
Well, I know that Gillibrand just made a statement about the Olympic, wasn't the Olympic Committee? No. I think maybe it was Olympic Committee, about how that there certainly was a cover-up and that really needed to be, you know, that really needed to be fixed. And, I mean, I think that's the first time I heard anybody around here talk about, you know, any of this at all. So I was glad to hear that.
Lisa or Susan?
So I don't really have anything to add to what Lisa said, but I do think that we are seeing a lot more of our female electeds speaking out against this, but I don't think they're just getting the coverage that the male electeds are getting, and I think that that's a real problem.
That's pretty interesting. Is it because the news media is run by men, do you think?
I mean, just very quickly, in New York, at least in the state Senate, women are being excluded probably from having the major conversations. And we know that in, you know, in Albany, it's 3.5 men in the room, right? It's Governor Cuomo, Speaker of the Assembly, Speaker of the Senate, and the IDC, and there's no women there. So I think that I'm just so disappointed but not surprised that there's a punitive element in the state Senate's internal policy that, you know, quote-unquote false accusations are going to be punished, because oftentimes if you use a standard judicial model of trying to investigate, there's often not going to be much evidence either way, which is why a truly restorative justice-based model takes the testimony of a woman or a gender nonconforming person as sufficient evidence of a wrongdoing, because understanding how they're marginalized within systems of justice. And it's not surprising that they didn't take a restorative justice model, but they're just assuming that the women who are being harassed and assaulted are somehow equals to the men who are powerful and perpetrating these actions.
Okay, wow. Susan.
Yes.
Do you have anything to add?
Oh, that was me. I just spoke. So.
I'm sorry. Lisa. sorry.
I think, no, that's good. All right. I don't have anything to add, but I think Susan's points are absolutely right on.
Okay. Now, Liz, you've lived in Albany a very long time. What these two young ladies are talking about, do you find this alarming or shocking, or do you think?
I find it very interesting, and interesting is the wrong word, but hearing it from them really kind of says to me, you know, really where we are in this state. I mean, in many ways, I think we're very primitive with the way we think around here. And that I think it's going to take a while for people to understand that this is not okay, whether it be men, women, it doesn't matter, but that we're not going to tolerate it anymore. And I think that in itself is a good place to start. And, you know, I think these days when somebody does something that you find really annoying, you know, it shouldn't be. I think more women, more men are going to speak up. And that's really, you know, that's what I'm hearing. And that feels good to me. Like I said, you know, I come from an era where you were supposed to laugh at a lot of this stuff. And, you know, that's pretty much how it went, you know. You're supposed to think it's all funny. And, you know, we're done with that. I'm glad about that, I can tell you.
Now, let me pose this question to all three of you ladies. In 2016, the presidential candidate was a woman. Do you think that her candidacy changed the dynamics of women all over this country? In other words, women are more freer to achieve what they want to achieve. Lisa?
You know, I think that in some ways it was very empowering for women to see a woman presidential candidate. And at the same time, with the result of the election, I think and, you know, the misogyny with which Hillary Clinton was treated throughout her candidacy and continuing on till today, frankly, women are just, frankly, tired of it. And I think that's where a lot of the resistance movement comes from. Not all of it, certainly not, but the resistance is really driven and led by women, and I think a part of that was seeing a prominent woman mistreated in many ways and electing a president who has been overtly hostile to women, and other underrepresented groups.
Susan.
So I wish I could say that it was that Hillary Clinton's candidacy was a barrier breaker. In many ways it was, but in terms of these issues, I think what it did was I think it really woke up a lot of women like myself to how much we still have to do. And I think that what's the silver lining is that many of the people in the resistance are women, and it's, I think that the grassroots leadership of the resistance is women. And I think that the people who feel like urgency to be active are women, and also people of color and gender nonconforming and immigrants. So obviously with many other groups who are being marginalized by this administration. But I think that Hillary Clinton's candidacy was amazing and important in so many ways to help energize and teach us, open up my eyes definitely to all the work that needs to be done.
Liz, you know, we've lived through many presidential campaigns. What's your thoughts?
Well, I voted for Hillary, but to be perfectly honest with her, I don't think she has done that much for that. I mean, she had her own issues at home. And, you know, the fact that I don't remember her saying anything about power, women, when this was going on in her own house. So I have to tell you, you know, I think she could have, you know, I think she could have done a little bit better with that. And, you know, anyway, that's my thing about her. Yeah.
So, you know, this is going to be an ongoing saga as the legislative session evolves. So, Lisa and Susan, would you come back on Focus on Albany? You know, if any of the story breaks, would you come back on and share your thoughts?
Absolutely. Anytime.
Great.
I'd be happy to.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Lisa and Susan, Lisa, I neglected to, you know, ask you, What does True Blue New York do?
We are a grassroots organization. Been around for about a year. And our goal is to move New York in a more progressive direction. One of our major projects this year has been fighting against the Independent Democratic Conference, which is the group of eight senators who ran as Democrats but are working in a partnership with the Republicans instead of working with the rest of the Democratic Conference.
And
that's interesting.
Susan, tell us a little bit about No IDC New York.
So No IDC New York is a partner organization. We're part of the broader, with TrueBlue NY, we're part of the broader anti-IDC statewide coalition, and we're focused more on the electoral support, so raising money and trying to help candidates on that end, but also working closely with other grassroots organizations like TrueBlue NY to support greater awareness about the IDC and why it's such a big problem to progress for women, immigrants, people of color, anybody who needs health care, that sort of thing in New York State.
And Liz, you have a quite a colorful background in business. So tell us a little bit about what you do.
I do coaching and training in an industry that I said that is primarily male. And one of the things that we've been dealing with, I just want to bring this out because this is, you know, the question is, who is liable for what? And in our industry, people do a lot of subcontractors who are not payroll people. And so the question is, are they liable? And in certain instances, you are liable for someone who either calls on your staff, if you know that they are, that they have a reputation for being, you know, a stalker or whatever, and you don't talk about it, then you may wind up in that position where you have some liability. And that was the part that I was really interested in, because people don't realize, you know, they just think if somebody works for them, that's the extent of their responsibility, you know, my employees. But sometimes it goes beyond that, and that was what we discussed in a panel the other day in our industry with a couple of attorneys and myself. So the question is, who is kind of liable for what, you know?
Okay, thank you, ladies. And this is an issue that will be discussed as the legislative session goes on. So you've been listening to Lisa
Delacroix.
Susan Kang and my friend Liz Beth Calandrino. So if you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes. If you have a comment about this show, hashtag Focus on Albany on Twitter. Thank you, everybody, for being on the show, and thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Cynthia.